Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Time now to talk Texans with ESPN Texans reporter DJ Bienemé. Brought to you by Houston Powder Coaters and the DraftKings Sportsbook at Golden Nugget Lake Charles.
We're doing this right now, DJ. Work with my mental gymnastics. I know that the Houston Texans record says 6-4, but actually they're 4-1. The Texans are pressing the reset button and they're back to 4-1. You know why? Because Nico Collins probably is playing on Monday.
He is playing.
And when Nico Collins plays for the Houston Texans, they're 4-1.
All right. So in the four, they beat who?
The four teams that they beat, same four teams at the beginning of the year that they beat. They win Which the season opener against the Colts. They beat the Bears.
Garbage.
The Bills.
They almost blew that game, but yeah.
Yeah. And the other game, the Jaguars.
Garbage.
Still 4-1 with Nico Collins.
Yeah, I think the issues that persist with the team were with.
They
know,
were.
They were with, you know, even when Nico played, it was still a problem. So, I mean, CJ alluded to it after the Thursday night game against the Jets after they lost. I think Jonathan Alexander asked, hey, like, if they bring back, you know, bringing back Nico, does that fix some of the problems? They know it's more than just adding back Nico. So, yeah, like, 4-1, I guess. But, you know, I do think if they had Nico, they probably beat the Jets. I still think they probably lose to the they probably still lose to the Lions.
Wow.
I think they probably still lose to the Lions.
So, you were over at NRG Stadium yesterday. I know they made some players available at the podium. What's your sense of the vibe for this team? A team that is at least having two players only meeting. By my math, they had the one last Monday that John Alexander wrote about in that great piece in the Houston Chronicle on Saturday. They told us, both Jimmy Ward and Joe Mixon, after the game, they had a players only meeting after the game. And Jimmy Ward hinted there might be another one. It did really feel like they had all been punched in the gut and the air still had not come back. Obviously, you lose a game like that where you're up 23-7 on a 7-1 team. That's going to happen. Do you think that they have put this one in the past, especially considering some of the issues that you just mentioned have been so persistent this year?
Put it in the past. Yeah, I would say so, mainly because, you know, it's the NFL. You can't allow, you know, one game to turn to 2-3-4. So I do think they understand that. They had very high expectations for themselves, just like the fan base did. So, like, they're just trying to get back on track, right? And push towards that, and making sure they can, you know, get to that. So I think that, them having all the team meetings, you could look at it both ways, right? That could be a sign of concern or a sign of like, okay, this team gets it. They do need to start playing better because, I mean, words can only do so much. And the cure to everything is just playing better and winning. So I think, you know, the next three games, they'll be 9-4. The vibes will be better. But the vibes, you know, it's really going to come down to how they do in that three-game stretch in 10 days. Mm-hmm. That's really determine, like, the vibe going into the playoffs.
That 10-game stretch, which ends with a Netflix game against the Baltimore Ravens. It's the Dolphins, who suddenly have life again. And the Chiefs. So, yeah, that's going to be tough. These next three games, it does look like a bit of a cupcake buffet, if you will. I am more concerned about the players-only meetings. I say that because I think we all like DeMeco Ryans as a head coach, and clearly the defense is buying into what he's sending as a message. But offensively, there does seem to be more missing than just, hey, the second half, they can't do anything.
Yeah, I would say that. In the second, so it's funny, each second half, there's like a different issue, right? Like second half against the Jets is purely protection. The second half against, well, not purely, but protection, and that had a trickle-down effect to, you know, CJ kind of being skittish in the pocket.
Was that the second half against the Lions you're talking about?
No, the Jets. Okay. Yeah. But the Lions game, CJ opens it up with a pick, right? And he, him and Bobby, I guess you could say that, well, you know, they kind of got fooled a little bit in that regard. That was just a great play by Carlton Davis. But I think that for Bobby, right, like, he's human at the end of the day, right? And if back-to-back drives and interceptions, right, that changes the math in that aspect. And a lot of third downs, I think the biggest issue with a lot of third downs was the Detroit Lions did not respect the Texans wide receivers. They said, we're going to go bump and run, press coverage, cover one, single high safety, and he's not going to shade anywhere. He's just going to be middle of the field. And the guys could have went on the outside, right? And I think that if, you know, that was probably the biggest issue, obviously beyond the fact they couldn't run the ball. And Bobby, I think Bobby knew that, which is why he kept trying to run the ball and establish that. Because, again, like, I was talking to Mike Dugard of the Athletic, covers the Seahawks. Yeah. We always talk on the phone, and he made a really good point. Like, if they just had a couple of four-minute drives, like four-minute football, basically when you turn out the clock, things of that nature, they probably win the game. They just needed one of those drives, right, where they're really, like, you know, maybe if they had a six-play or seven-play drive, even if it ended a field goal or even in a punt, they probably win the game. You know, in the second half, they didn't have a single drive that lasted longer than 4 minutes and 27 seconds.
Right, and I know after the game, DJ, they were asked about if the defense ran out of gas, but it felt like the defense ran out of gas. They looked a lot better in the first half, and then all of a sudden the Lions start running the football, and it did feel like, okay, now they're starting to get a little bit worn out. And obviously, you got complimentary football here. The football, right. If the offense is not staying on the field, the defense is going to get tired.
However, this has been a consistent trend. Second half, the Texans' defense does give up more points. Mm-hmm. Granted, the offense isn't scoring, so that also hurts that too, but it's not like, from my viewpoint, like teams are just, you know, piling on in the fourth quarter, which I can see that, you know, they're also scoring in the third quarters. They're scoring, obviously, in the fourth quarters. Like the Jets, the first drive of the third quarter, they scored, right? The Lions didn't score first drive because they threw a pick right back. But once they got the ball right back after that, after a few plays, they scored on that very next drive. So I think that there are adjustments being made, and it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to say hilarious, but it's like, I don't understand why D'Amico and Bobby are so dismissive about when people mention like adjustments, right? It's like, you know, Bobby said, like, it's not like they have like a magic whatever, or D'Amico saying there's adjustments made throughout the game. But yeah, but there's clearly a massive adjustment, not a massive, but a large enough adjustment that explains that in the second, y'all game plan to go into the game, teams adjust to it, and then you guys don't have a counter to that.
Yeah.
There's enough evidence now, you know, and I think, you know, I get it. You know, D'Amico doesn't, because if they admit that they got to do a better job of adjusting, then that's them putting, you know, taking the sword and, you know, being like, hey, this is on us. We're not coaching well enough. And it's very clear they're very proud coaching staff, a very prideful coaching staff, where they're not going to admit their faults.
But how can you be proud of this, you know? And to what you were saying, DJ, yeah, about how they're mentioning changes happen over the course of a game. They have to adapt. The adapting is not happening. And I don't know how they can go out there. And I get it. They're just talking with us. And it's very rare that coaches or players are truthful in a setting like this, because words can be used against them. But it does feel like they're gaslighting us a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, you know, they're peeing on you and telling you that's raining. It's like, nah, bro, this is urine. This is urine. You know what I'm saying?
So, come on,
like,
R. Kelly, this is not cool.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I would say there's something happening, and it's very, and again, it could be subtle adjustments that teams are making. And I think, again, like, each team makes something different. Like, I think in the second half, the last two games, it was two different things. You know what I'm saying? And like the Jets, they decided to go with more quick game against the Texans defense. And then the Lions, they decided to run outside the tackle box, mm-hmm. and try to get on the edges and things of that nature, instead of trying to run in between the A gap and a little bit of the B. I try to get more on the edges in that aspect. And again, like, defensively, you know, the Lions defensively, they just said, we're going to go man on third down. And, you know, the Texans had some plays, like, obviously, you know, Dalton Schultz was able to break free. But I would say the only criticism to Bobby I would give that is that it's very clear on third down they're going man. So maybe run some mesh plays, some pick plays. Or, granted, he did try that on their last offensive play. I'll get back to that later. But maybe throw an earlier, because after he threw the back-to-back picks, it was one run on first and second down the majority of the possessions in the second half. But I would say on the last play, they tried to, you know, run like a mini pick play to get Dalton Schultz open on a slant route. He slipped, but that was going to be covered because Branch was all over it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, even that wasn't going to work. So, they basically, you know, like, and that's why for this game, I can't blame Bobby that much because it's more like, it was more of a personnel issue at that point.
For sure, he is part of the blame. And that's what I wanted to get into next because, look, there's a lot of frustration with Bobby Slowik. I think the entire city is out on him right now, whether that's fair or unfair.
Yeah.
In this game on Sunday, though, there were clearly some plays that he drew up that worked. The Joe Mixon touchdown run. The touchdown pass that C.J. Stroud should have thrown to Tank Dell that ended up being an interception.
Right.
To what you were saying with Dalton Schultz, there was a post route early on that last drive of the game. He was wide open down the field. C.J. just didn't see him. And then whatever happens where he slips. Okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think this was Slowik's worst game. I think the problem was, though, as the game wore along to what you were saying, I think they realized that the receivers weren't getting open, so they were trying to run the football. Every single time they tried to run the ball outside, the lines were way quicker to the ball than they expected. And then, you know, the screen plays that they run, they just don't know how to do them in the same way that the Lions can.
I mean, again, like, you know, like...
They tried to do things that the players did not execute. So
You know, I'm not a fan of screens in the NFL, to be honest. That's just me. Maybe running back screens I'm cool with, but like receiver screens, I'm really not fans of them.
Especially with this team. How can you be?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not across the board. Like, I just...
You got to block. Guys are running forward. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's the NFL. Guys are so much faster. Like, you know, like, it got to be really, really clever for me to be... Like, the one that Joe Mixon was clever. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be... Like, the one that Ben Johnson ran to Gibbs on third down where he had Gibbs motion behind, over motion behind Goff, and then he dumped it down. They got down the sideline for a big game. It got to be stuff like that. If it's just, like, bubble screen, come on, man. This is not high school. You know what I'm saying? But I've been a big stickler on that since I've been covering the NFL. But, yeah, and, like, you know, Bobby, everybody deserves criticism. Like, CJ deserved criticism after this past game. Obviously, like, the O-line not being a great running lanes deserves criticism. The receivers not – like, it's not just Bobby. It's a multi-layer collapse on the offensive side against the Lions.
Still, though, a lot of people are coming after Bobby Slowik. I thought this was an interesting tweet from John Crumpler, and I'll be honest, I don't know what success rate or any of these advanced statistics mean. But John Crumpler compared Bobby Slowik's offense to another NFL offense. Texans passing success rate, 41.1%. The other team, 40%. Texans pressure rate, 41.3%. The other team, 40%. Texans winning percentage loss to sacks, negative 196.4%. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
The other team's winning percentage loss to sacks, 148.4%. Texans rushing success rate, 34.2%. Other team's success rate rushing, 38.5%. The other team is the Chicago Bears, who just fired Shane Waldron.
Right. I do not think they should fire Bobby because that doesn't fix anything. Just like how the Bears firing Shane isn't going to fix anything either.
I'm with you there. I mean, look at what happened when the Jets fired Nathaniel Hackett and moved it over to Todd Downing.
Nothing changed.
Nothing changed.
Yeah.
It's going to create...
Same with the Raiders. They just fired their OC. Yeah, what changed?
Luke Getsy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, nothing
Bears last year.
Yeah, nothing really changes when you make that move. I mean, people say, "Whoa, look about Joe Brady and Ken Dorsey."
Exactly.
But like,
that team could run the ball. That team had James Cook. That team had a really good offensive line, right?
And again, like, they, like, Brady was calling, like, Brady is a different type of play caller than Ken Dorsey. And I don't want to say he's running like a completely different scheme than Ken was, but like, he just has a whole completely different philosophy. We don't know what type of philosophy Gerard Johnson has.
You know, it would be first time he's taking on this new job midseason. And I like Gerard a lot. Gerard helped me shave 0.2 seconds off at the Texans flagship station combine that we had. He helped me run a 4.8 4.40 the last time.
What was this?
This was 2015 or so. Anyway, Gerard just changed my stance. I believe he's a great coach entirely because of this moment.
For sure.
But again, that's me joking around a little bit. To what you're saying, you are going to shrink a coaching staff by one man. You're going to put a guy who has never been in that role before into another job where they all have to make up for the absence of that one guy. They're all going to be doing more. And I don't know how that necessarily creates different results.
I mean, if you want to fire Bobby, I would suggest going to Bill Lazor. He's actually called plays in the NFL before.
Lazor.
He's been in schemes like this before. and there's not so many moving parts, right? Like, you can still keep people in. Like, because if you fire Bobby and elevate Jarrod, who's going to be the quarterback coach? So now Jarrod has to go from running the entire offense to now being running the entire offense along with being a quarterback coach. Like, that's not a recipe for success. We just saw the Jets. They fired Robert Saleh, mm-hmm. elevated Jeff Obrick. So now he has more responsibility on his plate, and now their defense stinks.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I saw when they played the Texans, but that's not here nor there.
Missed 20 tackles, I guess, on Sunday
against the Cardinals. The yeah. Cardinals, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they've given up 30, like they've given up 30 the most. Like, they've given up 30 points, like, I think, like, three or four times since Saleh's been fired. And that's, like, the most that they've given up in a season since 2021, right? So, yeah, like, I think that firing him doesn't do anything. I think people just want somebody's head to roll because – you know, we're kind of in this space now where, like, you know, when you have a quarterback that everybody likes, people always try to find excuses for why the quarterback isn't playing well.
And they don't make excuses for anybody other than the quarterback until the absolute last second.
Right. And it's not all on CJ, obviously. Like, I think the pass protection has been an issue. And that's caused him to be a little more skittish in the pocket and move around a little bit more than he needs to. You know, but guys aren't getting as open as they need to. You know what I'm saying? And you know, it is what it is in that aspect. I think that, you know, Tank had a good game against the Jets, but when he struggles against press coverage, right? And teams can press him and go from there, right? And, like, you can only do so many trickeration with your skill guys. Eventually, you kind of need them to be able to win without you having to, quote-unquote, scheme them up. So I would say, like, a lot of it does come down to execution, and you know, from talking to some people in the locker room, they do point a lot of it at execution. But some of them do wonder, like, are we getting out coached? Yeah.
Is that just the offensive coordinator? Is it more the offensive coordinator?
No, just I was talking offensive players.
Okay, just the offensive players. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, for sure. So that's kind of where I'm at. Like, it's a big pie. And, you know, everybody has their hand in that pie. And it's greater than just 1% for CJ, right? Like, CJ even admitted, like, that game's on him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, it's not all on him, but he's right. If he does not throw that pick, the second pick, they probably win that game.
Hell, even the first pick, I think it just killed the flow.
I do think, because, like, I don't want to say you can see his confidence drop per se, but, like, it was like a string of bad plays for him after that, right? Like,
right, yeah. Because
you had the pick.
Spiraled
then,
a little
bit. Yeah, then the second drive, guys were dropping pass. Like, Robert dropped the pass. Mm-hmm. He was under a little bit of pressure. Then the next drive, the interception happens. Then I think Dalton had the big reception on that one, but then the pick happened, like, a couple plays after that. Then after that, like, everything was just kind of, you know, out of sorts, right? Because these people are human at the end of the day. Like, they're not robots. This is... If you play Madden and you throw a bunch of picks, like, you're going to feel like, ah, man, I'm kind of off my rhythm right now. I'm not seeing things well. Like, and that's just a video game. So imagine actual players in that moment. And, again, play callers in that moment. So, I think offensively, it's funny. They'll shake back. Like, I think they'll be fine this week, and they'll be fine the following week, and fine. Because they get Cowboys, Titans, and Jags. I think the Titans game will be a little bit of a tussle. Because the Titans defense is respectable. Yeah. So I think that'll be an interesting game. And then same with the Jags game is always going to be interesting. We'll see how that one goes in that aspect.
Jones, baby.
I think Trevor will probably
be. You think he'll be back? They're not going to do the season ending surgery? I know that was on the table. Okay.
No, I don't think so. I mean, okay. they're reporting today that, you know, optimism that he'd be back after the bye. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see, man. But I think they'll get back on track. But I think that some of the issues that they have right now, I do think Nico fixes some of it because, like, he can get open quickly. And I think adding that can just give the offense some legitimate juice in that aspect.
What do you think can improve most by the end of the year? I mean,
offensively or overall?
I would just say overall, because I think right now that's what you wonder about. You have the parts that you do. You're not trading for anybody. You're not signing anybody unless they want to bring in Nate Davis or the Bears just outright release because no one across the league wanted him at the trade deadline. What can they get better at in the coming weeks, realistically?
I'm really curious to see how the run game looks this week.
Me too.
Because I think that, you know, this man was a pariah, But I do think Kenyon Green at left guard gave them a little bit more in the run game.
I think that's clear.
Yeah, and I think that...
Look at last year, they couldn't run the football at all. They've had some games where they've been able to run the football this year. What's the commonality?
Right. So I because Kenyon Green's best trait is run blocking. His issue is he's guaranteed five plays that end the drive. He's guaranteed that. Either it's a holding, a flag, a sack. Yeah. He's guaranteed, like the Jets game, like you can pinpoint so many plays where he ended the drive himself. But he's effective at, he's an effective run blocker. But he's a semi plus in the run game. He's just a triple negative in pass blocking right now. So, because double negative is a positive. So, you got to say.
Yeah, that makes sense. We're doing weird math on this show.
You know what I'm saying?
I said the Texans are
4-1. Yeah, you know? So,
run blocking can maybe get better than it is right now.
Yeah, I want to see how that looks. Because, again, if Juice at left guard, for me, I just don't feel like Juice gives you that much in the run game, at least right now. I want to see more because obviously the Detroit Lions run defense is pretty good. But again, like if the offset is you can't run the ball effectively, but you can at least pass block a little bit better, I don't know how that makes me feel.
Yeah, and I look at Patterson too. Patterson doesn't blow people off the ball.
No,
I mean he's a late round draft pick. I feel like there was a play last year. I forget who it was against, but I remember he was in pass protection. And I think he got thrown back on his ass like 5 yards or something like that. He's just a smaller guy,
right?
As far as offensive linemen go, of course. So yeah, I'm wondering about that. And DJ, going into this year, my big question about the Texans' offense was: are they all of a sudden going to be able to run the ball? Because it does feel like there's just something missing from Bobby Slowick's offense when it comes to this team running the football the same way that all these other Shanahan variant offenses do.
For sure. So I'm just curious to see like if can they get better at that? Because I think the season kind of rides on that. If they can't run the ball, because like last year they had the element of surprise from a passing standpoint. Now this year teams kind of know what they want to do, what they like, what they things of that nature.
Stroud's probably got some tells by this point.
Yeah. He for sure got some tells. And I was just watching like a highlight clip of like from someone that posted on Twitter last year on like November 7th. And like I was looking at it was just showing all the like crazy throws just right after the Bucks game. All the like good throws CJ had throughout the entire rookie season. And they posted this last year. I was just watching it. And one thing I noticed was like his pockets, like he had such clean pockets to make a lot of these throws. And he's just not having that this year. And there's no reason to think that that's going to all of a sudden become much better in that aspect. So I'm just curious in that aspect. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they can get that right, running game, then I think they'll be able to mitigate some of the pass protection issues and kind of go from there.
Well, we'll see. And hopefully the Texans can see in Jerry World. It is a night game, so no sun. No issues.
There'll be no issues, no sun. So, I mean, this is a game, though, they got to win.
For sure.
By, like, double digits.
We need a Patriots-esque performance against the Patriots earlier this year.
Yeah, for sure. Mainly, for morale reasons.
Yeah.
Because, like,
everyone's got to be questioning themselves.
Teams don't want to win ugly. Like, winning ugly, like, it's fine early in the year and later on in the year.
Or if you're the Chiefs.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, they've won so much. It's different. But I think that, for a team that hasn't won anything of significance outside of a playoff game, adding all this talent, right? Because people tell me this is the most talented team in Texans history. Oh, I never bought that. I never bought that. I mean, but
it's a more talented team than most, though.
Yeah, but like,
I get what you're saying.
I don't think it was better in 2012. I don't think it was better in 2019. Mm. So in terms of just pure talent,
yeah.
So, they want a blowout win. I think that'll help for the morale and
run up the score.
I mean, I don't even know if he's down there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, run up the score, really put up some points.
Did you know Jerry Jones cried after the first ever Texans-Cowboys game?
Yeah, I mean, they lost.
They lost it. And Jerry Jones said afterwards that it's one of the few times I've cried.
Yeah, I would have cried, too. I would have cried, too. Especially what that team turned into, too. I think a blowout win here would go a long way for the like a W, it could be like a W win. It could be like 10, 11, 12. Like, that would go a long way. Because, like, the Cowboys, they they've been blown out a lot. Think about it. They've been blown out a lot. Like, most of their wins have been, like, nail-biters outside of, like, the Browns win. No Dak. No DeMarcus Lawrence. No DeAndre Blaine. You know, he hasn't played much this year. Like, they're missing a lot of guys. They don't got no run game. They can't stop the run.
Nope.
If you can't blow these guys out, like speaking by win, like, the morale isn't going to be much better. Like, they got to start, in their eyes, racking up some good wins. Because the whole win by ugly stuff isn't sustainable because, you know, like, last year was fine because, like, it was a team that had never won anything. This is the first year of all of them coming together. Like, a win's a win.
But this year, it's not.
Yeah, because they're trying to get to the Super Bowl. Like, they're talking Super Bowl. And they know what a Super Bowl team looks like, in a sense. Or at least they know what that feels like.
Yeah.
So, if they can't start, you know, putting, like, a bad – this is a bad Cowboys team, right? If they can't put them away, you know, but they will. I think they'll win by, like, 13, 14, 15, 16, I think 14, 17, maybe 20. I think they should be able to win this one.
I'd like 30, maybe 40. 69? Sure. Let's do it. Nice. Put hang a 70 burger.
I mean, that wouldn't be bad.
A 70 burger, everyone would feel great.
Yeah.
That's probably the one thing that's going to impress people because, as you said, everyone's expecting them to kill the Cowboys on Monday.
Yeah.
The thing is, it probably will be closer than you would think.
The spread is 7.5. So if they can win by 10 plus, then all right. You know,
I think no one will think anything differently if it's 10 plus. I think it's really got to be, like, to what you're saying, three scores. And
three?
Maybe some people will be like, okay. But I don't think anyone's going to be like,
I think Texans fans will be happy if they win by, like, two scores. If they win by 14, I think they'll be happy because outside of Patriots win, what game have they won by more than 10 points?
But that's not the point. The point is they want these style points because they think going into this year, as hyped as they were, that they should be better. So when Texans fans show up in the middle of the second quarter after a Cowboys win, are they going to be jazzed up by anything less than a 30-point victory? I don't think so.
I think they'll be – if they win by 14 plus – let's say – because think about it. If they went 28-14, you think they're not going to be happy.
No one's going to care. Everybody's going to be like, oh, these teams.
So it got to be 17 minimum.
No, 21. I think three touchdowns.
So you think if they win –
they win by 31-14,
Texas fans won't be happy?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you're crazy. 31-14?
It's a miserable bunch these days.
Yeah, I mean, the 15 the 15 Texans fans that are miserable. Yeah, like,
I guess. There were more Lions fans there last on Sunday night.
So. It was funny. We were like, man, there's nobody here. And then, like, it got packed by kickoff.
Yeah, with Honolulu Blue.
a lot of Honolulu Blue, for sure. But if they win by 17, I think for sure Texas fans will be happy.
I hope so.
Think about it. If they win, like, 17, right? If they win 28-10. Not gonna be happy.
No.
28-10.
Oh, this offense is gonna score.
Think about it. They've scored over 20. They've scored over 24. What? Like,
I know
twice this year.
It's not whether or not you are correct. It's not about that,
though. Bro. I think Texas. You should put a poll on that.
They got outside expectations.
Put a poll.
I will. That's a good
put
poll.
Put a poll, and I think Texas fans will be happy if they win. If they win by 14 points, right, they'll be happy.
All right, we'll see about that. He is DJ Benjamin. Catches work for ESPN covering the Houston Texans. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George. No Joe, just Paul. Stay put.
Back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
I love JBRM. I love it. If you're watching on YouTube right now at ESPN Houston or on Twitch at ESPN 97.5, you would see the massive rib that I have in my hand. I've had a lot of it, but there's still a lot left. JBRM is one of the best restaurants in town. I don't know if you guys have been there to their East Downtown location, not that far away from Minute Maid Park, not that far away from Toyota Center. I'm telling you, if you are ever in that area and you're looking for good barbecue or just good food in general, I got mac and cheese in here. I got banana pudding in here. I have string beans that I'm not a string bean fan. They actually look good. There's brisket in here too. Oh, my God. Am I allowed to eat this, Sean, on the air and talk, or is that going to be too graphic for the YouTube, for the Twitch?
I think you can give us one bite.
Really good.
Okay, you already did it. All right.
Really good.
So you weren't really asking. You're just
I was asking to make it seem like at least one person on the show doesn't want us to sound like disgusting pigs.
Okay.
But, oh my God, J-Bar-M delivers every single time. I honestly forgot they were coming in today. Totally forgot.
Really?
I feel bad for Joe. There's no Joe today because Joe doesn't get to get this delicious. Mmm. This delicious treat. All right. We do this every 2:30, and my hands are going to need this in a little bit. Washed Watch Wednesday. Who is washed?
We all know something or someone that's washed.
He was a bum then, and he's a bum now.
From dating apps.
Swipe, 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 swipe.
To Skip Bayless.
It's my turn.
To Scott Boras. It's time to find out who's on Washed Watch on Gallant and George.
I believe that getting pissed off about what someone does or doesn't do during the national anthem is washed. I think it has been for a while. I say that as somebody who has been to hundreds of sporting events where the national anthem is played before. Everyone stands at attention. Some people put their hand over their heart. Most people, I believe all people, remove their hats. Some hardo right-wing Twitter account decided to do something for clicks and engagement on social media. This is from at Todd Starnes. It shows a picture of the Veteran Game the Veterans Day pregame show for Sunday on Fox. It looks like the show was done from right by some sort of battleship. And it shows a picture of Terry Bradshaw, Jimmy Johnson, Rob Gronkowski, all with their hands over their hearts while the national anthem was playing. And then it shows Michael Strahan, and his hands are over his hands at his waist. And this tweet reads, "Michael Strahan disrespected the military during a Veterans Day pregame show. The great irony is Strahan is on a ship surrounded by men and women who would willingly sacrifice their lives to protect his freedom. So his behavior is not just repugnant, it's downright cowardly." Such an overstatement. By the way, Michael Strahan's father is a veteran. And it has led to some of the most insane coverage I've seen. I don't understand why there is outrage over this. There's no knee-taking. This is not being done to make some sort of political stance like a lot of people got frustrated about with Colin Kaepernick. And Kaepernick even explained in the 18-minute press conference that he did after people asked him about it why he did it. He said he had talked to, get this, a veteran, I think was it Nate Boyer, who told him, hey, if you take a knee, you are still respecting the flag, but you are also making a statement about something. Though that 18-minute press conference, that's the only time where Colin Kaepernick hasn't seemed like a crazy person, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. And I'm sure the text line, there's many who are disagreeing right now. But, okay, now a guy standing at attention in the same pose that he posted on Instagram for Veterans Day as his father. All of a sudden, that is disrespectful. So here's what makes it worse. A Daily Mail reporter went to his home and basically got in his face to ask him about this tweet by this jackass online. And Strahan, I think understandably so, got mad, shoved the person's camera away. He felt the need to make a statement on Instagram because of all of the backlash. Michael Strahan, NFL legend, I believe Texas Southern player right here in our own backyard. And on top of that, co-host of Good Morning America had this statement on his Instagram.
Everybody, it's Michael here. And I want to address what happened this past weekend. And I feel like I need to address it because it spilled over to the point where I get out of my car today and I'm ambushed by a media outlet here at my house, which I'm not proud of the way I handled that whole situation. But I think anybody out there can understand the things you're going to do, you're going to protect your family, and you're going to protect your home, which is what I felt like I needed to do in that moment. And it all stemmed from this past weekend in San Diego with my Fox crew, 2 days in San Diego with the Navy SEALs and with all the other sailors there, and then a two-hour show praising the military and all that they've done for us, celebrating Veterans Day. And we had our national anthem. I didn't have my hand over my chest. Everyone thought he's protesting. He's making a statement, which is so far from the truth. I have nothing to protest. I have no statement to be made. The only statement that should be made and that I want to make is I love the military. I've always loved the military, and I will always love the military. I do so many programs to help veterans and soldiers. I grew up on a military base with a father who's a major in the Army. My brother, my sister, my cousins, they all served in the military. I'm a military brat. And so the fact of somebody saying that, you know, I'm unpatriotic couldn't be any further from the truth. And if you want the truth, I'll tell you the truth, is that I was caught up in a moment. I'm looking at all these young sailors standing there at attention before the national anthem played, and I'm thinking to myself, how incredible. How incredible to be that young and to know that you want to do this. Like, it's such a commitment, but you're willing to commit to something that you know gives us our freedoms. Plain and simple. I'm just sitting there in amazement, in which I'm always amazed because I don't take it for granted no matter where we go around the world, from Afghanistan to all the military institutions here in this country. And by the time I looked up from that moment, all my five guys had their hands over their hearts, the national anthem playing. I somewhat panicked, and I'm like, do I be the fool that puts his hand over his heart after? Or do I just stand here with my hand in front of me respectfully? Which, that's what I did. That's what happened. And if that offended any of our military and veterans, I apologize to you, because that was never my intent. I'm a product of the military, a proud lover of the military, and a proud lover of all those who served before, now, and who will serve in the future.
It's ridiculous that he had to say that. It is absolutely ridiculous. We got too many losers online who are looking for stuff like this for everyone to get mad about. And what purpose are you serving by putting that out there, Todd Starnes? What purpose are you serving? I'm going to put this person out who I know nothing about on blast because he is cowardly and repugnant for standing during the national anthem. Standing. And look, honestly, I don't take the national anthem that seriously. But since I'm not making a protest about it, no one's getting mad at me. Couldn't get mad at anybody. Get mad at me for whenever I'm near somebody who hasn't been standing next to me during the national anthem before, for saying whenever the gallantly streaming part happens, me just whispering quickly, that's my last name, while I still have my hand on my heart and all that stuff. But we got to stop looking for things to get pissed off about. This exploding to the degree that it did, where Strahan felt the need to put that very well-stated Instagram post out, a military brat and Michael Strahan, it's effing ridiculous. Anthem talk, it is so washed, we need to stop. And we need to stop putting stuff out there that is clearly designed to get rage clicks. I feel bad for Michael Strahan having to deal with this. And then you got Jay Glazer making statements on behalf of Michael Strahan. It's one of the more crazy, we just got mad about something that was really stupid stories I can remember in some time. So washed, national anthem talk, and national anthem outrage. Shut the fuck up. Sorry, had to get that out there, Sean. It needs to stop. Please, for the love of God, grow a pair, relax, and then enjoy your J-Bar-M ribs.
That would help anyone relax.
It would. Just get a J Bar M rib and just take a nice big old chunk.
Some mac and cheese.
A little mac and cheese. Enjoy it.
I do wonder, like, the people that do get upset about this, and then for what, 36 hours before it gets kind of pushed aside, or not pushed aside, but you know, Michael Strahan perfectly explains why he wasn't making some statement. Like, you, the person who got upset about this because you saw a tweet, like, What do you do then? Like, how do you, oh, I guess I was wrong. Maybe I should stop falling for obvious rage bait BS. Like, nope. You just keep trucking. You find something else to get mad at later that day. That's really, like, the most annoying part. Is that, like, no one stops and, like, looks in the mirror and, like, oh, like, this jabroni, whatever this guy's name is, that has a fake-sounding name.
Yeah.
He's not going to go, oh, maybe I should be a little less quick to judgment to try. Because guess what? That was his most successful tweet of all time.
Definitely.
That was his most successful social media post of all time.
He peaked. I mean, if he's a troll, good job.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, if he's a troll.
Like, why would you, why would he ever learn his lesson? He should just do this every week.
Honestly. Just find somebody in the national anthem.
Yeah.
Just not paying
be the national anthem guard dog.
Anyway. It's Galan and George, Washed Watch Wednesday. We got a little garbage time before we get out of here. Next, stick around, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
You're listening to Galant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Galant and Joe George.
Last chance to dance. Did have a thought, a couple of thoughts from the last segment on the text line, 713-780-3776. Someone from the 832 said, you're only supposed to put your hand over your heart if you're a veteran. That's interesting. I honestly do not know the veracity of that. I'm just reading a text. I guess I'm going to have to look that up after the show. Another text from the 832. As a Marine vet and voted red, that troll is a loser. Not everyone has to put a hand on their chest. Strahan has done more than that troll for the military. Quit being soft, people. That's from Chris in Humble. 100% with you. Thank you for your service, Chris. And happy Veterans Day. I realized on Monday in the midst of the Texans collapse that I did not give out one. A wish of happy Veterans Day. I am not a military brat necessarily, but I am from a family with a lot of people who served in the military, most of whom in the Navy. But my grandfather, my mother's dad, he fought in Europe. My dad's dad was in the South Pacific in the Navy. My family, it's big into the military. So very appreciative of everybody's services in the defense of our country and in the constant striving to allow us to have the freedoms that we do, which include me being an idiot for 3 hours on the air talking about the most inane things possible.
And then getting barbecue in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. That's what the USA is all about.
USA. USA.
Let's do a little garbage time before we get out of here.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
I'm really upset about this. I thought I was done being upset about the death of Peanut, the squirrel, and the death of the raccoon who everyone seems to forget. Do you remember the raccoon's name, Sean?
Fred the raccoon.
Fred the raccoon.
I don't know why I remember. I remembered it during the show, too. We forgot and then remembered.
For those who don't remember, October 30th, these two animals were seized from Mark Longo's home at an animal sanctuary in Pine City, New York, on the Pennsylvania border after receiving complaints that wildlife was being kept illegally and potentially unsafely. It turns out, because you have to test for rabies by euthanizing animals, that the squirrel tested negative for rabies and that the raccoon tested negative for rabies. So they killed these animals to test them for rabies, and they found out that they indeed did not have rabies. Gotta love our government. Federal, state, local. Always backfires. It feels like when they over-pursue.
There's gotta be a better rabies test out there, right?
Not yet. Not yet.
Get on that.
Got to put them down.
Get on that, vets.
Got to kill them to test it.
Find a better way.
I would think that would be a priority for some, but listen, the FBI's busy focusing on Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce's home being burglarized, which is really hard for me to figure out. Did the Chiefsaholic do it because he's wanted in seven states? Like, I don't get it.
It's a it's federal.
He's in jail, by the way.
Or is he?
That's a good question. I don't know.
The Riddler, a.k.a.
The Riddler, yeah.
Chiefsaholic.
Shout out to Texas lawmakers. They filed bills to make daylight savings time year-round. Shout out. I don't like how dark it's getting all of a sudden.
Yeah. I really, really don't care either way. Just I don't like that we do both. So just I would just say pick one, and I can roll with that.
Yep.
Either sunset at 9 or sunset at 7. But either way, just make it happen.
I agree.
I just don't want to change my clock. That's all it is.
I don't like in March how we lose an hour. I do like how in October, usually the best time of year, we gain an hour on a Saturday night. I do like that.
That, yeah.
But does it make up for the lost hour? It does not, in my opinion.
Yeah, mathematically you'd think it would, but I don't think it does either.
Connor Stallions has entered the high school coaching transfer portal. For those who don't know, Connor Stallions, the man at the center of the Michigan sign-stealing scandal. Our brother in arms, some would say, if you're an Astros fan, Patriots fan, like myself. Connor Stallions is now coaching LSU 5-star-plus quarterback commit Bryce Underwood at Belleville High School for the playoffs. He joins his second high school football staff of the year after serving as Mumford's defensive coordinator and interim head coach. So he's going to try to get this guy to go to Michigan.
Yeah.
This guy is blackballed and still committed to helping out the blue. I respect his service. Not quite to the degree that I respect our military's service. Happy Veterans Day, 2 days later. But Connor Stallions, he will die fighting for Michigan.
Yeah, yeah, no. You cannot question his commitment to the cause.
You can't.
Taking a job just to potentially flip a kid. That's shout out to you.
Shout out to him. And on that note, that's going to wrap up today's edition of Gallant and George. Big thanks to DJ Bien-Aimé for stopping by. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Joe George will be back tomorrow. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Wednesday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.